All right. Our next presenter is Manuel Ocasio in his final year, and he's in his final year of his Master's in Public Health program at the University of Miami in the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health. He is also a research manager for the Tobacco Control Research Group and is interested in LGBT population health. So please help me in welcoming Manny.
Thank you for the introduction. So I'll be presenting some research out of the Tobacco Control Research Group at the University of Miami. I'm personally interested mainly in LGBT health research, so I'm trying to adapt that into the current research I'm doing at the school. I just want to recognize my co-authors, members of the research group, comprised of students, mentors, and senior faculty who have helped me and guided me through the research. And I have no relationships to disclose. And just to give a brief overview in terms of what the presentation is going to cover, I'm going to give some background information in terms of tobacco, public health implications, burden, go into a little bit about what's known in terms of the LGB population and tobacco use, also what the objectives of the research project are, and the methods we used, study sample, also the results that we found, and then a little bit of a discussion. So what do we know about tobacco? I think tobacco is pretty well known. It's been followed for a number of years, and it's known that it causes a number of cancers, namely lung cancer, cancers of the bronchus, the leukemia, and also other chronic diseases, for example, heart disease, stroke. And it's known to exist disparately among the population. So as you can see here, men tend to smoke more than women. And also in terms of education level, you can see that there's a trend in terms of increasing education means decreasing levels in smoking. Also, there has been some association in terms of poverty level, meaning income plays a role. And on top of smoking, there also is smokeless tobacco use. And about 3.5% of the population is known to engage in smokeless tobacco use. In terms of secondhand smoke exposure, the public health burden is a little bit less, yet there are known diseases that come out of it. For example, there are some small associations with lung cancer. And throughout the years, there have been a number of laws implemented in terms of partial and full and clean indoor acts that have decreased the burden of secondhand smoke in the public. But still, there are about 4 in 10 non-smokers in the U.S. that are exposed to secondhand smoke. Now, there are some known disparities, but what about the LGB population? Now, in the published literature, one of the challenges here is really to define the population. So in terms of sexual minorities, there's been a systematic review that evaluated a bunch of studies and have found that there's a strong association. And relative to heterosexuals, there's a much higher odds of smoking. And there's very little data on smokeless tobacco use. And a number of issues go along with this, which was mentioned in previous presentation, in the fact that sexual orientation is an identity measure, but there's also behavior and also attraction, which makes it difficult to really compile and understand what may be causing this. What's been speculated so far is that it's associated with stress, things like internalized homophobia. There's a higher likelihood of engaging in risky behaviors, including smoking or any sort of tobacco use. Another issue is that the data that currently exists come from small, non-probability-based samples or probability-based samples that don't exceed much more than the state level. So, for example, there are some data on smoking rates in California. So in this study, we are seeking to produce nationally representative estimates of self-reported and also biologically confirmed exposure. Now, this is the first time that I've known in the literature that I've used or compared LGB and hetero smoking rates or tobacco use using biological confirmation. And also we'll be able to evaluate secondhand tobacco exposure, which to my knowledge, there's only been one study that's looked at it in the LGB population. In addition to producing those estimates and comparing them between the two groups, we look to calculate and compare the percent agreement between self-reported use and biologically confirmed use, just to see whether or not they correlate well, and if there's any differences between heterosexual and LGB identified. So our data, they come from a nationally representative sample, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. It's a continuous cross-sectional survey of the U.S. civilian non-institutionalized population, and it uses a complex multi-stage sampling strategy. And it collects a number of various health indicators, both self-reported and also laboratory and by physical examination. So people are sampled through households, come to the mobile examination center where you can see these lab people, and they collect data which is publicly available on their site. So for our purposes, we use the 2001 to 2010 NHANES pooled, which totaled about 52,000 participants. And within that, we only isolated those who were ages 20 to 59, and that's because the sexual orientation question was only fielded to people within that age range. Except for 2009-2010, they actually did extend it to those 18 and 19, but for consistency across the study periods, we decided to maintain the 20 to 59. Now, within those, we only selected those who identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and heterosexual. And finally, among those, we only selected out those who had both self-reported tobacco information and also serum cotinine information. And serum cotinine is actually the biomarker that we're using. Cotinine is the primary metabolite of nicotine, and it's detectable in the blood, and you can gauge exposure within the past 24 to 48 hours. So the operational definition of our exposure, like I mentioned, is only those who said either heterosexual or straight, homosexual or gay, or bisexual, and homosexual or gay and bisexual were combined due to some limitations with sample size and also because they grouped together. And in terms of our outcome, our outcomes are both self-reported and biological. Now, I'm saying tobacco use because the question that I used is during the past 5 days whether a person has used any product that contains nicotine, which would include smoking, cigarettes, chewing tobacco, or even nicotine patches. Individual analysis of each of those show that most of the individuals actually did engage in tobacco smoking, not necessarily chewing tobacco or any of the other types listed there. Now, in terms of biologically confirming exposure, primary exposure was gauged using cutoffs established by the CDC, meaning this is a cutoff at 10 nanograms per milliliter. If it were greater than that, the person was designated as a smoker, a tobacco user, excuse me, and below that, a non-user. And then to select out those who had secondary or secondhand exposure, we took out those who were primary users and isolated those who had less than 10 nanograms per milliliter and those who had higher than the limit of detection. And this is due to the laboratory procedures that are used, there's only a certain degree that can be detected by the instruments. So anybody who reached 0.015, which is the lowest level, and up to 10 were included and considered exposed. So what's the plan? All analyses were conducted using STATA, the SBY command. And as I mentioned, the goal was to produce weighted prevalence adjusted for a complex survey design. And in order to test for associations, we use second-order Rouse-Scott chi-square statistics. So, in terms of our results, so between heterosexual and lesbian, gay, bisexual, you can see that the tobacco user rates are higher in the prevalence for that group compared to heterosexual, and the results were significant. And in terms of our adjusted prevalence rates, we found that about 3.8% of the total population was actually identified as LGB. And they represent an estimated about annual 5.2 million U.S. adults. So you can see here that we were able to detect a difference has been seen in the previous literature. Now, in terms of biologically confirming their primary tobacco use, we found similar prevalence where you can see about a third of heterosexual were confirmed to be exposed, where about 42% of LGB identified were confirmed to be exposed to tobacco, and these were significantly different between the groups. Now, in terms of testing between the percent agreement between the self-reported measure and the biologically confirmed measure, we see that actually the percent agreement is fairly high among both groups. And when I say percent agreement, this means that anybody who said that they did not engage in tobacco use and also was confirmed biologically not to use, or said that they did and was also biologically confirmed, were grouped together as agreement, and those who were discordant were not agreement. So most people were apparently, quote unquote, telling the truth. But between the two groups, there were no differences that we could detect. And in terms of secondhand tobacco exposure, we see here that the point estimate for lesbian, gay, and bisexual is slightly higher, but there were no significant differences between the two groups in terms of exposure. So the conclusions of the study, as confirmed and reflecting basically the other studies that have been done, the prevalence of primary tobacco use is higher among LGBTs relative to heterosexuals. You know, it would be nice to look for additional correlates that might be impacting these differences. Unfortunately, there are some limitations with sample sizes. I did pull 10 years of data, but I only had about 559 LGBT-identified individuals. So it's challenging to stratify by other correlates such as ethnicity, race, poverty, income level, things like that have been shown in the general population. But in future analysis, I will be stratifying by gender to see if their differences are there as well. We did not find differences in terms of secondhand smoke exposure, but it's worth looking into. Some speculation in terms of why LGBTs may be at higher risk or have higher prevalences of tobacco use, maybe due to the fact that they tend to go to safe spaces, which are often friendly to tobacco use, for example, bars, nightclubs, which may indicate that they may be at higher risk of secondhand smoke exposure. And given the fact that I have a limited sample size, it's important to have increased surveillance and to really monitor this population group. But Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services, has mandated that sexual orientation be included in all national surveys. So we may be able to actually improve our surveillance methods and understand a little bit more about why this group may engage in more tobacco use. Thank you.